It's sunny. You've always known that.
Hard work pays off. Dreams come true. Bad times don't last, but bad guys do.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Suds in the Square Circle, Suds News. My name is Vinny Apicella. This is Christy. Christy, how are you today?
I'm all right. How are you?
Doing all right. First thing we'll address is the very devastating news and also surprising news that you saw at the beginning of the episode. Billy Miller, who, you know, for General Hospital fans know as Jason while Steve Burton was on Y&R, and then basically the first Drew Kane, passed away at the age of 43 just a couple of days ago on the 15th of September. It seems like we're doing a lot of, unfortunately, in memoriams of younger people recently. It is devastating.
Yes.
No cause of death has been officially put out there yet. So there are some rumors out there. I'm not going to add to them. It's, in my opinion, it's disrespectful. But the official statement from his agent was that he was battling manic depression. So as soon as we know more, we'll let you all know, probably a repost on X or Facebook. But either way, Billy Miller, I liked him as an actor. I didn't know him obviously before General Hospital, but at the same time, you know, afterwards, I really liked his body of work. He brought a different side to Jason and, you know, and then Drew. And actually, I prefer him to Drew more than Cameron Matheson.
I mean, I liked him as Drew. I think he really had great chemistry with Becky.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed his time on the show, and I'm just really sad to hear about his passing.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. So, of course, our condolences and love go to his family, friends, and fans.
Yes.
As we mourn the loss of Billy Miller at 43 years old. But anyways, we've been, we tried something new last week. We broke down the show into different segments in terms of based on what we were talking about. We're going to do the same thing this week and then, you know, post the whole thing. So hopefully y'all enjoyed it. We've also got a couple of new things that we're going to introduce over the next couple of weeks. First thing we're going to do is introduce one new segment this week, and then we'll introduce another new segment next week, and we'll just go from there and just have some fun with it. So why don't we get started with our first topic? Main topic that I think probably from the very beginning, Sonny was acquitted of all charges on Monday, and he this is what the setup was, we find out from what Brick, you know, put together for Betty to take to his enemies, you know, the Gatlin gang. So they staged a setup. They set up a shipment from Pikeman, and when the feds opened the boxes, it was coffee.
Coffee. Good old Sunny coffee. That's what you get, feds. Would you like some coffee here? Yeah, they didn't find what they were looking for because Sonny knew they were sniffing around and was smart and came up with that. So that was pretty smart of him. He was one step ahead. And I think one of the feds say later in the week, like, well, he's not always going to be one step ahead. We'll get him next time.
Like, okay. Yeah.
All right. Good luck with that. It's Sonny Corinthos you're up against, you know.
But I like how he explained that. You know, outsmarting the feds wasn't the plan. Like that was like an added bonus That was an afterthought because he was more looking to flush out who his enemies are and who, you know, who's the head of the Gatlin Holt gang. And the, you know, the fact that the FBI picked up on it. And we actually learned more towards the week that it's the warden from Pattonville that is actually working for Cyrus. So Cyrus is not this changed person.
Yeah, that kind of all made sense when they revealed that. I was like, yeah, I knew Cyrus was in on something shady. I knew it. So
I agree. I didn't think that he was a fully changed man, but the way that Jeff Kober plays the character is so cerebral that you don't know. Like, he could have, you know, the way that he, you know, preaches and quotes the Bible and, you know, says he turned over a new leaf, especially with Laura and everything, really made you think that maybe there was a possibility. But he's still very much manipulative and very much a cult leader.
Oh, yeah. He's just using the sort of throwing some Bible verses out there to trick everyone into thinking he's changed. He is not. And I think if you quote, this is a Joyce Meyer quote, for those of you who know Joyce Meyer, just because you go to church doesn't make you a Christian. So just because Cyrus knows a few Bible verses doesn't make you a Christian, y'all. Like, we know that.
That's true. But the question we have to find out is, like, we know why Cyrus is against Sonny. He's been against Sonny since he came on Canvas back, you know, right before the pandemic hit. But we also, now we have to find out why he brought the warden up. Like, what was the whole point of inserting the warden into Pattonville? Was it just simply so he could run his criminal organization from Pattonville and have her look the other way? Because that's kind of like my big question right now.
Yeah, I think he's hoping to work out a certain deal with her so he could get, you know, released early or something for good behavior.
Yeah.
Quote-unquote good behavior, because that's the show he's putting on.
No, I agree. And it definitely can. It definitely could backfire for the warden at some point. And we'll probably see that going forward. But how about the fact that after Sonny and Charlie go to visit Drew in Pattonville, and Drew's talking to the guard right outside the visiting room, and Cyrus is right around the corner just listening to him? Like, it's almost like the writing is frustrating because you almost want to believe that Drew is trying to do something. Like, I almost felt like the way they shot that should have been having the audience think that Drew is being, you know, secretive, being on the down low and everything, finding out the information from the guard and not knowing that Cyrus is lurking right back there. I almost thought that should have been the Friday cliffhanger, the way it was shot. It shouldn't have been shot that way, because it almost seems like Drew is just not somebody who's very stealthy in trying to get information.
Yeah, no, that's not, like, I mean, he's kind of talking to that guard kind of sort of out there in the open. I mean, aren't they in a public space? You can't, it's not like he talked to the guard off to the side in a corner or something. Like, it seemed like anybody could listen in. But I feel like Cyrus, it's almost like Cyrus knew already, like maybe he had been spying on Sonny, Charlie, and Drew, and already had overheard that was what was going to happen. So he was like, "Oh, okay. So I'm going to keep an eye on Drew and see where he goes after this meeting." So I think he already, like, he was already up and off with that.
Well, I want to see, because now that adds a different wrinkle into the whole Cyrus and Drew situation in Pattonville, where, you know, with Cyrus having the quote last week saying, "Oh, well, now I'm under Sonny's protection because of you, or just by proxy because of you, because you're under Sonny's protection." And it almost adds a new wrinkle now as to what kind of manipulation is Cyrus going to try to use on Drew to, find out what Sonny's going after, or find, you know what I mean? Like, I don't, that's another thing. Where is that leading? So that's another wrinkle of the story.
Right. Well, I'm sure we will see how that shakes out, but I think anything Cyrus does at this point, he definitely has an ulterior motive. He's not being nice to Drew just to be nice.
Right.
It's for inside information. So.
Oh, of course.
Yes.
All right. I did like, however, how Michael went over to Sonny's after the acquittal and just basically spilled it. I honestly thought he was going to say, look, I hired Dex to work for you. I thought he was going to spill that, but he didn't. But I did like the idea that he went over there and apologized and said, listen, I'm sorry for all the guilt that's been consuming me over the past, you know, past year or so. And I just want to work to get back to where we were. I thought that was really good of Michael.
Right. I think he still loves his father, despite how angry he is with him. That scene just showed how much he still loves his father, despite the fact that he hates what his father does. And
right.
He's such a criminal and deserves to go to prison, but well, because he's Sonny Kermithos. You know, even if he went to prison, he'd be out in a day.
Exactly. Sonny is the definition of anti-hero. But yeah, I liked how Sonny's family, Sonny's kids basically came out in force for him at the trial. Because you saw Dante even saying, listen, I don't care what the feds think. When I became a cop, you know, it didn't preclude me from also being a son and supporting my father. So, you know, I like that. Christina's always been in her dad's court. And you know, with Nina there, I did like that. But the look on Diane's face when, you know, when they announced that the charges were, you know, dropped without prejudice, was almost priceless, because of the fact that she's always the one that's so stoic and the one that has to work to get him off. Mm-hmm. It's like she's never had that just out of the blue happen.
Right. Yeah, that was an easy work day for her. She didn't have to do all the work of arguing in the courtroom like normally she would. So that was that was kind of interesting to me too, because I was just kind of sitting there like watching. I was like, oh, that's quick. he got those charges dropped quick, and then they were all like, feds weren't as sure as they thought they were about catching Sonny, and all they had was coffee beans, and they don't have the evidence. And I'm like, Hope you got some good coffee beans out of it. I mean, coffee is right. Pretty good. So, I mean, I love coffee.
All right. Anything else you want to go over about Sonny, Nina, Dante, Michael, that storyline?
Yeah, not really. But I'm wondering when they're going to let the truth drop with Nina and Sonny about her. She keeps having these flashbacks of.
Right.
Of what she did of getting Carly to try to, well, she tried to get Carly arrested. Carly almost got to prison. And then, yeah. So I'm just waiting for that other shoe to drop. And I'm guessing that's probably not going to happen until like maybe November sweeps.
I'm thinking that's going to happen more towards February sweeps when they're going to get married. You know?
Oh, you think they're finally going to drag it out that long?
Because you got to remember, this entire the entire thing with Nina and the SEC hinges on Eddie Main's storyline and Ned regaining his memory. Unless Nina has a sudden conscience battle and actually comes clean. I don't see that happening.
I don't know. I think the guilt is kind of eating her up a little bit.
Could be. So. But we'll see. Sorry, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with the next topic right here on the Suds in the Squared Circle. We'll be right back. All right, another new topic here. We talked about Sonny. We talked, unfortunately, about Billy Miller. Next, we're going to move on to probably the hottest topic this week, Sabrina. Spencer and Trina had a big week this week. I felt like I honestly felt like they had a lot of growth in this week alone, starting from Monday, where, you know, Spencer brought home the food and for a, you know, a little dinner, and Esme thought that the food was for her, and then Trina came over and Spencer just out of kindness and courtesy said, well, do you want to join us? And then Trina basically put him in his place.
Yeah, rightfully so. I'm really glad she did. And she spoke up, because I'm tired of that girl just like letting things fester and not being outspoken about it. And I was like, I was a little mad at Spencer. I was like, you gonna invite her to your date? And like, he sat down on the couch and started getting out all this food. And she was like, oh, you brought food for us? And I'm like, I know that food is not for you, girl. Like, I know it's not for you. So I was mad, because I was like, Spencer, speak up. Like, you have a date with
me. Yeah.
But thankfully, she excused herself, you know, when Trina showed up. And I was just like, girl.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I was just like, there was somebody online on X, I think, who pointed out that guys, that Spencer was just so oblivious this entire time. And I think we talked about that last week. But, you know, just and I can understand that from a guy's point of view, that, you know, now with the situation between Esme and Trina, but I could also understand that Spencer being too nice to say, hey, this food's not for you. Trina's on her way over, you know, make yourself scarce or whatever. I'm almost at the point now where I'm waiting for one of them, whether it's Spencer or Esme, to move out. And I like how Esme questioned Carly, do you still rent out the rooms above Kelly's?
Yeah. I was like, please move.
Do you think that Spencer's going to have a problem with that, because he's the one that wants to be there for his brother?
I hope not. I think they need separation, because his living situation is, I feel like, it's essentially killing his relationship with his girlfriend. So
exactly. I agree. And I think he's finally starting to see it. And I mean, Trina's been there already. Trina's known that already. But I think Spencer is finally starting to see it, especially with the scenes they had at the gallery this week, when Spencer's like, let's go away. You know, let's go away for a weekend or whatever, and just, you know, get out of Port Charles. And, you know, I don't forget where they said they were going to go, but they're going to go. What was that?
They're going to New York first, which is what the compromise they decided on. And they're going to go to the city for a couple nights, a couple days.
Yep.
And then he wanted to bring her to Turks and Caicos.
Right,
and
yeah.
He was like, well, isn't it hurricane season? I don't know about that. Like, I think that's too much time away or whatever. And I'm like, oh, go to Turks and Caicos. He got the money. He's doing it. Go to Turks and Caicos. I was like, kind of hoping like she went for, but she's like, no, let's just go away for a couple days to New York. So I'm guessing this next week is the week where they're going to do it, because it was very much talked about.
Yes.
With Trina and Jocelyn, that, okay, we're going to go away together to New York.
Yeah, this is it.
It's going to be my first time. And I was like, oh, I hope he's worth it, because I don't know. I'm questioning his. I don't know if he's worth your first time, but I hope so, because boy has been just way too wrapped up in the whole baby situation to really give your relationship that much effort and time. And I feel like most girls would have just probably gotten aggravated at this by this point and just broken up with Spencer, but Trina's holding on. And this may be like a real hot take, but I kind of feel like Trina has on rose-colored glasses when it comes to Spencer, and she just chooses to see him in the best light possible. And she's just so, I think she's almost too gracious to forgive so many things. She's like, oh, but Spencer's like really trying. And I actually, like, she said that she liked that he wanted to be such a good big brother to Ace.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, yeah, that's admirable to some degree, but I feel like she's giving him a little bit too much credit.
Yep.
because he's so focused on the baby, that's like, I feel like that's become like 90% of his time is spent on the baby and maybe 10% left over for Trina.
Yeah.
That's how I feel. But I mean, look, she loves him. And I think when you love someone, you really do tend to see what you want to see about that person and not any of their flaws. And so that's just kind of how I see their relationship. So
I agree.
I don't know. He better make that first time good. Like, he better live up to that and then follow through after their first time and like really give their relationship the effort it deserves.
Yeah, no, exactly. And it's the same thing where I feel like, but at the same time, I feel like Trina is, she's also wrapped up in a lot of her own family stuff. So, you know, they're both, you know, focusing on other things besides their relationship, you know, and I agree. I feel like the relationship part of it has been put on the back burner. So now with them going away, and I'm glad it was Spencer that brought it up, because he's the one that's kind of been so non-committal, if you want to call it that, because of the whole thing with his brother and, you know, him always putting him first. I'm glad that Spencer was the one to say, hey, you know, why don't we go away for the weekend? Why don't we get away for a couple of days? You know, you're so focused with your family. I'm so focused here. Let's take some time for just us. And I'm glad that, you know, he was the one to bring it up and not Trina.
Right.
I liked at the end of the week when, you know, Trina finally made it to the dorm and Joss is in there, and Trina made a comment to Joss about, you know, are you guys like always doing it or whatever? or Joss said, oh, good thing you didn't come like, you know, 15 minutes ago or whatever, because Dex is here. And, you know, and Trina's like, well, what are you guys always in bed? I forget exactly what the wording was, but that was funny. I like that they're,
I mean, they do have probably the most active sex life of any couple I've seen on this show as of recently. And I think they get a lot of heat for that. But I mean, it kind of makes sense. I mean, they're both, you know, young, in their early 20s, right? Or late teens. Like, that's what you do in your 20s. Like, I mean, might as well. I mean, you get old and some body parts start hurting and they're not going to work the way they're going to work. So you might as well use it while you got it, right? So
that's very true.
Advantage of it.
Dex does not need Blue Chew. So,
yeah. So, you know, it does, like, that was kind of my complaint about Dex and Joss in the beginning. It was very much like, I feel like they had a very sex-filled relationship in the very beginning, and I think it was kind of built on this lust they had for each other, but it did turn to love.
Yes,
and I think they are building on them as like a long-lasting relationship. So whether you like them or not, like, they've gone from lust to love.
Yeah.
So they are a couple in love, and that's just what a couple in love, a young, very young couple in love does. But I do like the comment that Trina had, because she also was like, well, you weren't like this with Cam. And Joss was like, well, that was a completely different relationship. And
Cam's a completely different person, too.
So, I mean, I'm glad Cam was at least, like, brought up, though. It was a nice mention. But yeah, I mean, that was a different relationship for Jocelyn. Like, I think she was just really getting to know maybe what she wanted,
right,
in a relationship and who she was. And that was very much like, I don't even remember if she did it with Oscar before she had it with Cam.
I don't think so.
She's that far back. So I think that was maybe her first time ever with Cam. And it was his first time too. And then I think they realized in that relationship that sex wasn't going to solve, you know, their issues. So. Right.
Well, I also think that at the time, not that Jocelyn's done too much maturing since then, but I also think that she was also very resentful of Cam because Cam was working all the time to help with his family. You know, she could say outwardly that she appreciates his, you know, responsibilities and being responsible, but I think she resented him because she never had a, until recently working at Kelly's for her mom, she never had to work a day in her life. So she doesn't know what it's like to struggle. Cam, knowing what Elizabeth does and the fact that Elizabeth is a nurse who works all the time and can barely make ends meet with three sons, he decided to help out around the house and help out with the finances. So him working, you know, three jobs or two or three jobs, I think, honestly, I think that kind of scared Joss away almost, where she could respect him, but she doesn't want to be where she doesn't have time with her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. But there's definitely two separate relationships. Yes. And I think she made that clear, you know, that it was just different. How she felt with Cam is different. How she feels with Dex, because I think it's a more adult relationship for her with Dex. And I mean, rightfully so. They're two hot young people. Get it on. Go for it. It's fine. I mean, I had issues with it in the beginning because I felt like all they did was spend time in bed. But like, that's what 20-year-olds do.
Yeah.
But they do have conversations in bed, like meaningful conversations, which yeah. I kind of just glossed over in the beginning because I was like, what is up with having sex all the time? But you know, now I just kind of see it for what it is, and I, you know, enjoy their relationship. And I think maybe once Trina does it with Spencer, maybe she'll get a taste of it. And she's like, okay, now I want to do it all the time too.
Exactly.
We'll see what happens. Maybe Sabrina will start having a real active sex life too. We'll find out.
It's like Pringles. Once you pop, you just can't stop.
Yes.
So, yeah, no, I agree. I think that'll actually help the Sabrina fans get over their frustration with the writing. You know, and I agree to a point. They've had more obstacles and hurdles than most relationships. But look at the two families you're putting together. The Cassadines, who have always had a very dysfunctional family. And then, you know, with Trina and, you know, her fatherhood coming out not too long ago, plus with the whole thing with Curtis and getting shot, and they've had a lot to go through in the Ashford household as well. So it's just, it's, I understand where the Sabrina fans are coming from, but at the same time, looking at it from a realistic life point of view, it is plausible. That's just how it is.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Go on.
No, I was just going to say, like, I hope Spencer just, I think, well, like, they both need this 2 days away from everything.
Agreed.
And they both need to focus on each other. And if, you know, they feel like having a first time is right for their relationship, kudos to them.
Mm-hmm.
But Spencer better make her pleasure the priority. That's all I'm saying. Get out there, the girl deserves it. So.
Yes, exactly. All right, well, we're going to move on to another topic. Anything else to go over with Sabrina or Jex or any of that situation with the young team? Mm-hmm. All right.
I'm good.
All right, we're going to stop here. We'll move on. All right, we are back with moving on to our next topic. Probably my favorite storyline going forward right now is Cody and Sasha. And let me tell you, those scenes this week, Sophia Mattson, in my opinion, has the Emmy wrapped up next year.
I mean, they're giving them the material for it. The girl can't catch a break. I just keep thinking that every week. I'm like, oh my man, this poor girl.
Well, I think she finally caught a break now that Cody busted her out of Ferncliff. They got into the cabin. The first 2 days or Monday's episode where Sasha was going through detox.
Yes, that was rough.
that was a rough, rough. But I'm glad that Cody got through to her. You know, at first she didn't recognize him. She thought it was Montague coming after him. And then he had to be like, no, it's me. It's Cody. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, that was rough, but I almost feel like maybe Cody's done this before and knows what it's like to detox off of drugs. So he had some experience in it, and he knew how to, like, get through to her, and he kept encouraging her to, like, drink water, you know, just to get the drugs out of the system. I've never been through detox, but I've heard it's like you feel like you're dying, like crawling out of your own skin kind of feeling. Like, so I can only imagine it must not be pleasant.
I don't have any first-hand knowledge either. So it's the same thing. I've seen people go through it, but it's not, I've never felt it. So I can't empathize, but the way that she played it basically made me feel so, she had the compassion of just about every audience member because of it.
Yeah.
And then when Cody brought up, you know, fight for, you know, do this for Brando, do this for Liam, and she snapped back at him. That was those scenes were intense.
Yeah, they were. When he said that to her, I was like, ooh, he really went for the jugular. Like he really hit her where it hurts in it. But he needed to do that, I think, to like get her to fight through the detox. So, because I'm sure she just wanted to be left alone and not go through what she was going through. So yeah, but Cody did what he had to do to get her through that, and it just, like I said, I think he's had some experience, maybe himself or with a friend or something, that where he's gone through that or seen that happen, so he knew what to do to get to her, even though she was like, how dare you mention them? And then I was like, she's gonna be pissed that you just mentioned her dead husband and her dead child that she didn't even really get to meet. So yeah,
but no, I agree, and I think just that fire that he had to light the fire under Sasha, because especially when she said, you know, I have nobody anymore, you know, she lost Brando, she lost Liam, she apparently never knew her mother, or, you know, whatever the case was. And the only reason why she came to Port Charles was, you know, she wanted the money from Valentine to help her grandmother. It just showed, it showed a lot into her and how she's feeling. And then when Cody said, that's not true, I'm here, that right there meant the world to her.
Yeah, because she needs to know there's at least one person she can count on.
Yeah.
And she thinks it's Gladys, but it's not. And he's telling her, no, you can't trust her. Like, she's the one who's been doing this to you this whole time.
Yeah.
And she wants to believe the best about Gladys. And Gladys is not helping her out. Gladys is just there to use her.
And I think she's finally starting to see that now that Cody said it, but also Sam and Dante both said it.
Mm-hmm.
Because Sam and Dante came to the cabin at, you know, towards the end of the week, and they all basically told her, listen, Gladys is the one that's doing this. And now she's starting to put two and two together. Because Sasha's like, you know, all this started when I said that I wanted to get rid of the guardianship and I could be on my own. And I like how Cody helped her put the pieces together. Well, where's your, you know, when did this start? Oh, well it kind of started when I, you know, started seeing Dr. Montague and, you know, started taking those pills. And where's the prescription? What did the nurse say? Oh, well, the doctor just gave it to me. That's a red flag right there.
Right.
You know what I mean? Instead of going through a pharmacy with, you know, a paper trail. So I'm glad that Sasha's starting to see it now.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I'm glad. So hopefully there'll be a confrontation when she gets out of this with Gladys.
You could see Gladys panicking when she walked into Ferncliff and, you know, she saw the cops there and they said that, you know, Cody and Sasha were the two that escaped. and her immediately saying, oh, Cody kidnapped her. But then the nurse said, it didn't look like he was forcing her out. It looks like they were left leaving together. And, you know, and then Gladys going to Nina saying that Cody kidnapped her. And then Nina coming back with, well, maybe because you said that she was supposed to be out, maybe he was just saving her. So I'm glad that everybody's starting to see through Gladys now, too.
Yeah, me too. I'm glad Nina saw it, seeing through her. Sam sees it. Dante sees it. So hopefully she'll have that support system she needs to get through this. I just wonder if Burnclip is going to press any charges, or, I mean, they've got the APB, what do they call it?
APB.
APB out. So it'll be interesting to see how long they can stay in that safe house that Sam set up for them.
I have a feeling now that Sasha is, I have a feeling now that Sasha is on the mend. I think that now it's okay. I feel like, you know, Cody will turn himself in. Dante will vouch for him. And, you know, they'll be able to go. I have a feeling they'll be able to put the blame on Gladys when all is said and done. Because, I mean, I've heard that Bonnie Burrows is leaving. Obviously, she's not going to get killed. I have a feeling she may go to prison.
Her and Cyrus could become friends then.
Well, they were friends.
They were friends.
There was a point in time. No, was that Cyrus? No. That was Novak. Novak, who invited Gladys to Sonny and Jason's wedding. That's right. It wasn't Cyrus.
Well, Gladys is such an unlikable person. I can see her being friends with Cyrus.
Right, exactly. Yes, she, although we'll get to it with the next segment, but there's somebody I think that's become more, you know, we talked about it last week, who's become even more unlikable than Gladys, and that's Portia. We didn't see much of Portia this week, though. But we'll get to that in just a minute. Anything else in what I'm calling them Kosha? Anything else before we move on?
Just we had some really nice moments after she detoxed, yes. And I enjoyed it, and I actually enjoy Cody because of him helping out Sasha. So, you know, he keeps earning the brownie points with me. So, good job, buddy. Just, as long as you're not in it for the money.
Right.
Exactly. Gladys wants all that money anyway, so we don't need two people against her for the money.
Yeah. All right. Well, then we're going to take a quick break, come back with the next segment. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. We're going to move on now to Christy's favorite storyline of the week. Christy, if you want to bring it up, go right ahead.
Yeah, so as you know, my favorite thing to see is Elizabeth and her kids.
Yes.
So we've been able to see Jake a little bit more often lately. And we found out that the reason Jake was taking his time to meet up with his family, or rather, I should say, Elizabeth and Finn. I won't call Finn family yet. Let's not go there. Was that Jake is dating Charlotte at Cassadine, so that's stirring some feathers. I'm real excited, though. I'm just excited to see Jake on screen. I don't really care who he's dating. He could be dating some random girl from school, but I really like that they kind of put Jake and Charlotte together. I thought that was interesting. Like I don't know if they're really dating seriously, but I mean, how serious can you be at that age? Like, right. What?
Exactly.
Are they aging him up to 13 now or something? 13, 14?
I believe so. At least that's the way it looks. I would say about 13, 14-ish. Mm-hmm. But it's still the same character anyway. So
yeah.
So, I mean, it's just the natural evolution. And the original Charlotte is back.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's kind of worked out. Although, there was some kind of pushback as to why Jake would date the girl that was bullying his brother in elementary school. But then she came to his aid when she, you know, when she actually got to know Aiden.
Well, maybe she's since apologized and that's not obviously shown on screen, but I think they're just trying to put a pairing together for Jake that is interesting, that'll create a little drama. So,
and wait until Valentine finds out.
Well, that'll be another thing. I think he's got his hands full with Anna right now.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting to see. I mean, I always like when they make interesting pairings like that anyway, because it creates a little drama, and it creates like legendary like families to intermix together. That's why I like when Cam and Joss dated, because I was like, oh man, their mothers were going at it back in the day. So it's gonna be interesting to see that. Yep. So I always like that for those reasons. Mm-hmm. So to see a Cassadine dating a Weber Spencer, you know, like it's good. It's good story. I mean, I think it makes for good story. So
And it actually works out, because I know there were a lot of people concerned because Lucky is Jake's father, but as we all know, Lucky only adopted Jake because Jake's real father is Jason. So there's no family relationship between Charlotte and Jake, because Charlotte being Lulu's daughter and Lulu and Lucky being brother and sister, you know. So, I mean, there's no family relation there. I know that was a big topic online as well.
Really? People are really like y'all want to not have Jake be Jason's son? Y'all trying to rewrite history there? Come on, y'all. Come on.
Well, I think a lot of people forget that Jake is Jason's son.
Forget? I can't forget, but I'm a liaison fan. I'll never forget that night, okay? A lot of people like to call that the one night stand. I call it the night of passion. but, you know. That's a big deal to me that Jake is Jason's son and his first son.
Right.
So first biological son. So that's a big deal to me. Maybe not be a big deal to anybody else, but big deal to me, big deal to liaison fans, which we still exist. We're still here.
Right.
So.
And we never get to see Danny.
So yeah, we don't really get to see him. No. The thing is with Elizabeth's kids, which I've said plenty of times now, we usually get to see one of them at a time.
Yeah.
It's a rare occasion when it's all three of them on screen together.
Yeah.
But I like that we're seeing Jake more, and I hope they follow up on the storyline of Jake dating a Cassadine. So, and Violet was very vocal, as always, because she really likes the romances on the show. Yeah. Like any couple that's together, she's like, well, I have to know everything. I have to know almost all about it. Molly.
She's almost the new Molly. And not to compare her to the new Molly character, but or the new Molly actor. But I mean, when Molly was younger, she was always super romantic. I don't know if she was necessarily so nosy, but she was always super romantic.
Yeah, that's a good, I mean, I guess that's something they got in common. So I was glad Willow was able to like talk her down, because she wanted to like go over there and like give, you know, start playing 20 questions with them. And I'm like, no.
I think Violet was the comic relief of this week in general. Just from the very beginning, when they walk into Kelly's and Violet's like, you can't eat here. They might sabotage us. And just the interaction between Carly and Violet, and, you know, Carly saying, don't worry, we're only enemies on the softball field. You know, everybody, as my Aunt Ruby would say, everybody's welcome at Kelly's. And Violet's like, I'm going to keep my eye on you no matter what. So, and then just later in the week when her and, you know, when they're at Charlie's after the game, and, you know, Violet wants to follow Jake and Charlotte, and, well, I want to find out all the information about the date. And I enjoy, I'm sorry, but that was just definitely the comic relief of this week.
Yeah. I mean, I guess she is like a little comic relief, but just, I mean, it's fine. I don't find her that funny, but I find her a little more annoying than anything, just like I do with Molly. Like, I find Molly equally annoying. Maxie, I also find, I've found her annoying in the past. Just kind of my preference. You know, not my favorite character. Leo's my favorite kid character, like child actor, yep. kid character, besides like Jake and Cam and Aiden, obviously. So, yep. yeah, Violet's just she's that annoying little girl who just wants to know everything and put her nose in everybody's business. And I'm just like, girl, you're like 7 or something. Like, just chill. Like, get a coloring book out. Like, or a tablet. Now they give kids yeah. tablets these days and not coloring books. Kids yeah. don't know the value of coloring books and crayons. They really don't. They really don't. Glad I was born in the generation of what.
As someone who can never color inside the lines, I never liked coloring books myself. So
yeah. Well, I was all into coloring books. I was all into My Little Pony coloring book, and I put glitter on it. It was like a whole thing for me. It was an enjoyable experience for me, but I'm
I think at one point I had a, I had a WWF coloring book when I was younger. So,
well, there you go. Makes sense. yeah. Well, I don't even remember what like Elizabeth and like Finn talked about at the pub much, except that Eliz was like obviously seeing like, oh wow, my son's really growing up, and
yep.
and now he's like dating, and so I think she talked a little bit to Finn about that, but. I tend to drown out scenes with Elizabeth and Finn because I don't care for Finn. So I know they talked and it was fine. But it is just kind of like, I would rather see Elizabeth talk one-on-one with Jake eventually about his relationship
yep.
with Charlotte and what's going on there. And I would like to have a discussion and him be like, well, mom, it's fine. Like, we're...
Yeah,
maybe he like tries to say, "Oh, we're just friends. We're not really dating."
Yeah,
you know.
And I think you need. I honestly feel like there should have been more of that with even Cam and Elizabeth. I mean, there were some discussions they had, but even though I liked when Cam eventually accepted Franco as his stepfather, and I liked the dynamic that Franco and Cam had. I didn't like that Cam only went to Franco for advice. Like, I would have rather him go to his mother. And I know teenage boys, they don't want to go to their mother for a lot of things. I can understand that. But me being raised by a single mother myself, I know what it's like to be like, well, I can't ask my dad because I don't feel comfortable, or whatever the case may be. In his case, his dad has passed away. But so the next best thing would be a trusted male figure. But then again, it's like your mother has always been there. And sometimes your mother can give you a better viewpoint, being the female viewpoint. So like I want to see those discussions, as you know, even when, you know, even while Elizabeth is in different relationships, have her still be that single mother where the kids go to her for everything.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be nice.
Because I cannot honestly see Finn fumbling through some kind of a birds and the bees type talk to Jake.
Please God, no. 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 I don't want that at all. That's so weird and awkward. Like, and I think everybody would hate it.
I think like if that ever happened, like, God forbid when Violet gets that age, I think it's going to literally be Finn talking clinical terms to her, and she won't know what the hell she's listening to.
Well, Finn doesn't even want to think about it right now.
Right, exactly.
With him and Liz, like, but she's like, oh, well, wait till Violet starts dating. He's like, no.
But I did, I know you're not fond of the pairing, but I did like the conversation that Finn and Liz had this week, because I see Finn as just by the book, straight down the line, you know, no nonsense, not somebody who opens himself to having fun, But yet, you know, you see Liz saying, well, see what happens when you actually have fun a little bit. I like that because I do. I see Finn as somebody who I feel like, and, you know, without being a doctor, I think he's probably, the character himself is probably somewhere on the autistic scale because of how the character is.
Maybe.
You know, just no nonsense. Doesn't really pick up too much on sarcasm. But I did like how Elizabeth pointed out and said, see what happens when you have fun once in a while. And, you know, he actually smiled and laughed a little bit this week. You know, as much as Michael Easton can with those pursed lips.
Yeah.
But yeah, I liked that conversation this week. All right. Moving on. We'll go on to another segment. We still got quite a bit to go over. Actually, even looked at my notes. I don't have everything written down, but we've talked about a couple of different storylines even in this segment alone. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with the next segment. All right, welcome back. We're going to move on to another segment here. We're going to kind of get a couple of different storylines and one that's kind of under that umbrella storyline of Deception. As we all know, Deception is frozen right now because of the court case that's going to be going 6 months in, you know, into the future with the trial date about whether or not Tracy Quartermain came up with Deception in the past or the Deceptor in the past. But we did find out, we did have a couple of great scenes with Lucy going over and confronting Tracy, but also, and finding out Tracy's real motives. And also we went ahead and found out Maxie going to confront Brooklyn, and they're both fighting, you know, wondering about why they're targeting Deception, but they're coming at it from a completely different viewpoint. Lucy went over to Tracy because, you know, Deception is her baby. Why do you say that you created the Deceptor? And what do you want? How can we get this taken care of now? And Tracy came back, okay, well, you know, I already told you, 75-25. And then, you know, eventually they kind of got into negotiating and getting down to 51-49. Tracy would own 51% of Deception, but on the caveat that Lucy would give up her 1% voting right, or, you know, for ELQ. That was a twist I didn't see coming.
Well, that made more sense to me when that was revealed, because I'm like, I think that's what she's really after. I don't think it's really about the money, but I think she's just doing that to be, I don't know, to be Tracy, to be mean. I don't know. But I think she really is about getting more control in ELQ.
Yeah.
And she has this, she's got a lot of resentment towards Lucy for having
an affair with Alan, or not Alan.
Yeah, Edward. Like old past history that I don't think she's ever gotten over.
Yeah.
So it's like, honestly, I feel like just let it go, Tracy.
Yeah.
Let it go. But Tracy is not going to let it go. And she's going to be vindictive about it. And she's going to try to, you know, ruin a bit of Lucy's life over it. So it made more sense when she was like, oh, I want your 1% share. I'm like, then why do you need such a big chunk of Deception? Like, you really don't need it for the money. And that was even revealed in her meeting with Blair. So I was like, there you go. We knew it wasn't about the money.
But see, here's the thing. I think the reason why she went after a big chunk of Deception was because of Lucy's pride. Because even with Deception on the line and everything, Lucy still refuses to give up that 1% of ELQ. Like, what exactly is her motivation for keeping it? Is it just the control? you know, does she keep it because she really fondly remembers her affair with Edward? Like, I don't get it. Like, I don't know what Lucy's motivation is for keeping that 1%. You know, like, take yourself out of it. Who cares? Let the family deal with it, right? Does it really matter that much? I mean, the last time it... Because the other thing is, we all know that Lucy can be bought, you know? Like, when Valentine came over and he said, here, I'll bankroll deception for you as long as you vote me into ELQ as the CEO and side with me instead of, you know, Michael. You know what I mean? So it's like, on one hand, deception was the way to her heart. On the other hand, deception, she didn't even give a damn as long as she kept that 1%. I don't know. I don't know what goes through Lucy's mind. That's a very, very complicated character.
Yeah. I mean, she's not. I don't think she's playing her cards, I guess, close to the vest. So we don't, I don't think, know all the ins and outs of really why, but we got a little more information this week.
We did, yes.
So that just made more sense to me that she was like, oh, okay, that's really what she's going after. And like you said, Lucy's pride. She's out to shake things up
for Lucy. Yeah, exactly. But that wasn't the only confrontation we had this week. We had Maxie going over to where Brooklyn lives, you know, with Chase, and getting in her face and saying, you know, I like the line that she said. This isn't high school anymore. You're screwing with our livelihoods, with our job, with our income. That's adult shit right there. So it's like, honestly, it you know, we've known that Brooklyn and Maxie didn't get along in high school, and it was because Brooklyn always, you know, played the mind games and, you know, what have you, always, you know, manipulated stuff or whatever the case was. But now that they're adults, now that they're working under the same umbrella, and Brooklyn did this to give Tracy the information, now Maxie is really pissed because, again, it is. It's not just something simple where you can sweep it under the rug and apologize. You really, you know, Brooklyn really created a mess for deception, for Lucy and, you know, Maxie's livelihoods. I mean, Maxie has three kids, although we never see the baby. We barely ever see the baby, but she's also moving into the new house. So she's got bills that she has to pay and her income being frozen because deception is frozen.
He's scared right now for her finances, which is rightfully so. Like, she made a really good point of saying, like, look, like, this is people's livelihoods you're messing with. Like, this is not just some high school game. Like, this is real stakes, yes. You know? And she had every right to say that to Brooklyn. And then I feel bad, though. I still feel bad for Brooklyn because I think Brooklyn she's gotten deceived a bit by Tracy.
Of course.
And of course, nobody's really going to see that point of view because she's keeping that a secret even from Chase. And Chase still doesn't know that Tracy was the one who got him his shot at getting back at being a cop.
Yes.
That's still not revealed, I don't
think. That was.
It was? Like,
yeah.
He knows about it?
When they
he
were
knows that Tracy was involved?
When they were at the pool.
Oh, okay. That's when she revealed it.
Yeah, yeah, Brooklyn came clean and said, you know, Tracy was the one that got the meeting together. That's why I felt like I owed her, because she was going to go to you. And then at that point, Tracy said, I just got them into the room. You did all the work yourself, you know. But then it's like, Brooklyn did come clean and say that Tracy was blackmailing me to spy on deception. And I feel like I've hurt my friends.
So thank you for bringing that up, because it's been a while. So I forgot to reveal that. Cool. But I feel bad from Brooklyn's point of view, because Tracy really used her granddaughter to get what she wanted. And I feel like Brooklyn could have been smarter about it and seen that coming, but like, I don't know. I hope it's worth her losing her friendship with Maxie, because that's really sad to me that she doesn't have that many friends.
No.
On the canvas. So losing Maxie and Lucy is like friends, and losing her that job in the process, like all she has is like Chase then.
Yeah.
Like,
because even Ned's not in the right mind. So
yeah, Ned's not in the right mind. I mean, Olivia in yeah. some ways is like a mom to her, but it's sad for Brooklyn, because she really kind of put herself in a position where she's like losing one of her only like good friends.
Yeah. And I do. I feel bad on both sides, you know. I can appreciate Maxie's point of view, which is why she told Lucy, just settle. You know, we need to, you know, I need my paycheck, you know what I mean? So it's going to come down eventually. I don't think it's going to wait the 6 months. But it, you know, there have been rumors, and the rumors are flying, that General Hospital is trying to talk Erica Kane or Susan Lucci to coming back for one or two episodes. So, I mean, that could be where it's going, because even though Blair Kramer was revealed as Martin Gray's third ex-wife, which from the time that Blair and Todd, if you think about it in storyline, at the end of the, I'm assuming that ABC is completely disregarding the Prospect Park reboots of ABC of One Life to Live and All My Children, but even still, in the 11 years since ABC canceled One Life to Live, Blair Kramer was married to Todd Manning, and so within the 10 years, she divorced Todd, married Martin Gray, left publishing and went into cosmetics, and came, apparently, I think that's where it's coming to, she's the one that actually came up with the idea for the Deceptor. So there's a lot that Blair Kramer's been quite busy since she was on Canvas the last time, because, you know, the last time around, you know, she was on Canvas with Todd, but she didn't stick around, whereas Roger Howes has been there for over a decade now. So now she reveals, you know, yeah, you know, that I can't wait to be rid of that $50,000 a month, you know, payment. Because so it's almost like Blair's thought is to push Lucy and Martin to getting married, because that's something she said that she can't wait to get, you know, get out from under that. And it, once he marries Lucy.
Mm.
So I don't know where they're going with it. I just, that Lucy and Martin dynamic, while I do like them as a couple, it's very complicated. I can understand two people older in life not wanting to get married for one reason or another. But, you know, Lucy being the one that wants to get married, you know, is having a problem now because of this whole situation.
Yeah.
Although I did like how Blair brought up when she's talking about the 50,000, she's like, that's a lot of hummingbird cake.
Yeah, that was a funny line. I'm not really into the whole like Lucy Martin thing. I don't really see that as a long lasting relationship.
No, yeah.
I don't really see that much chemistry there either. So, I mean.
Well, I mean, I see the chemistry, but I agree. I don't see it's going to be long-term. I have a feeling this storyline might break them up.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see where it goes.
Right.
But I feel bad for Maxie. You know, they finally moved into Lulu's house. And then, you know, Felicia and Mac come over to help them get settled. And when Maxie brings up, oh yeah, they brought in this hotshot attorney from Pine Valley, Jackson Montgomery, and Felicia's face like, oh, okay. And mm-hmm. Mac comes back, yeah, he could have had your mother put in jail.
That was good. I like that they pay attention to history when they put in lines like that that are like, oh, wow, so there's history here.
Yeah.
It's good respect from you know, the writers that they pay attention to that kind of stuff, and they actually put that in there. So that was good.
Yeah, and I think that I liked the conversation that Maxie had with Felicia, because, you know, they talked about everything, and you know, Maxie's like, yeah, I ordered so much stuff for this house, but that's when Deception was stable. Mm-hmm. You know, so then, and then that again is why Maxie ended up going over to Brooklyn and Chase's and going to confront Brooklyn.
You Which know. By the way, she interrupted Shaylin a little bit.
Yeah.
They were thinking about being a little late to work, so you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could have got a little more sexy time. So, they always interrupt Shaylin. That's like their thing, you know. Shaylin gets interrupted all the time.
Yeah, because I don't think we've ever actually seen them be intimate. And once, yeah.
Part of a bigger, that was at the beginning montage of everybody doing it that night.
Yeah.
So I was a little bummed because they got like 30 seconds, if that, and then it was on everybody else. And they never cut back to them in bed or anything. So I was like, okay. So that was kind of my first hint that like maybe the actors don't care to like be that intimate on screen with each other. I don't know.
Yeah, and I would have to say that would have to be Brooklyn's character. I can't remember her. I always go blank on her name. Amanda Sutton. Yeah, Amanda Sutton.
Amanda Sutton. Yeah.
I would have to say that because I mean we've seen you know Harrison Chase in bed with you know Sasha when they set up that thing with Michael and then with Willow numerous times. So I don't know, maybe Amanda Sen just isn't comfortable with revealing any part of her body. Which again, gotta respect that decision.
Right. Yeah, I think I've come to the conclusion that we're probably not gonna get, you know, a very intimate love scene. We'll get an illusion to it happening, but then we'll see like the aftermath of them, like putting on clothes or something. You know, I don't think we're ever going to get a huge love scene like I was hoping we could get a long time ago. I think I made my peace with that. But it's okay. I mean, if that's the actor's choice, they don't want to do that. They don't want to do that. And I'm trying to think, like, the last time I think Josh had like a big love scene was when he was with Ulo, and they had the whole montage of it. That might have been before he got married. So maybe that's why, too.
Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe why he doesn't want to do, like, big, huge love scenes anymore.
Could be. It's always a possibility. I don't know. But, all right. Let's we got a little bit of time left. We'll get to the next segment next. We'll got to go over the rest of everything that we have to go over in the next segment. And we'll be right back. All right, so welcome back. We're going to get to our potpourri segment. Now we're going to kind of wrap everything else up that happened in Port Charles. Let's go ahead and start with Valentine and Anna and the cliffhanger from Friday. You know, Valentine, Anna confronted them, you know, when they were at the restaurant and the waitress came and said, here, this was from Detective Valcaneri, and they showed the flight plan and gave it right to Valentine and said, hey, explain this.
I'm glad she was out front with him and she's like, look, is this true? Why'd you lie to me? Why are you lying to me? Are you lying about anything else? I really like that she confronted him about it and he keeps saying, oh, well, it's this and that. And I'm not lying to you about anything else. And I'm like, but are you really? Why don't I believe you, Valentine? I don't think I believe you. And I don't think they're writing it in a way that we're supposed to believe Valentine. I think we're supposed to take Anna's side.
Exactly. No, I agree. And but then it's like knowing full well that, and it very well could be Valentine being involved to protect Anna, even though they're going against her. But at the same time, I think it's going to be under that bigger umbrella storyline of Pikeman that's going to eventually include Sunny again. And And then at the end of Friday's episode, when they get back to the room and the room is trashed and the stuff is written on the mirror, you know, you think you're safe, think again or whatever. Although I would love to see, you know, and maybe we'll get that this week. I would love to see who it was that entered the room, because hotels can figure out who entered what room when.
Security camera, footage. They've got to have security footage.
Not only that, but they could also do what they call a lock interrogation, where they print out the most recent locks, keys that were used. If it was a housekeeping key or another guest key or whatever, they can do that, which I always thought was funny, being a lock interrogation. You know, that's the name of it, because you're going to interrogate a lock. But
You would know that because you work in the hotel business, so you know that they can do that. I mean, it would be great if the DH does that kind of thing. Excuse me if you hear my cat, in the background. He's a male and he wants attention. So I would like to know that, but I also found it interesting what Valentin said when he was looking through the stuff and he picked up the thing that we think maybe has blood on it, but it's not really blood. He said ink. And I was like, ink?
Yeah.
What's going on here? who trashed the room and made it look like it might be blood, but it's really ink, and then wrote that stuff on the mirror. That was freaky. But we got an inside look of the bathroom of the Metroport room, which we normally don't see that kind of thing. An inside look of the bathroom. This is new. We usually never see this. So I like that they kind of had an extra little setup for that on the episode.
Absolutely.
That's so kind of interesting.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. Yeah. And then we also had, let's see, Curtis at the very beginning of Monday's episode. Really, Monday was the only time we really saw Curtis. And Curtis kind of came into the Savoy. He, saw Nika. He thanked Nika for allowing Marshall to help out.
For being an acting boss.
Acting manager.
He called it, which I thought was great. I think she deserves some praise and is a great addition
to
the cast. And I hope that they have her on more.
No, I hope so too. I hope that they do have Nika on more, because she is a fantastic character and a fantastic talent in general. So I would like to see that. But I also thought him coming back to work and then showing the staff come out with a standing ovation and clapping, saying welcome back, and he showed appreciation for the for the staff while he was convalescing. And then Jordan and TJ and Molly come in, they sit down, and I'm sorry, but there was really no reason for this scene.
It was very anticlimactic.
It was just
they were gonna have some big news to share, and it was basically what we already knew. It was so the surrogate isn't pregnant yet, and you have no news, so go away.
Exactly. It would be different if they said, hey, she's pregnant, by 3 weeks or what have you. So, I agree. It was a very anticlimactic scene. I think it was just literally put there for Curtis to have something to do. But I'm just, I could care less about that whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about this last episode. I just don't.
But
TJ and Molly, there's nothing rootable there. They're the most boring couple next to Michael and Willow.
Yep, exactly.
Where it was nothing but Willow dying for a year, and now she's great. Now she's going to go back to life and do things.
And that's what I was going to say. Now that Willow is healthy, she looked a lot better at Charlie's. She was. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to see everybody babying her. I'm tired of, do you think you'll be okay if I leave for an hour? She's an adult. She knows how to take care of herself.
Plus, she's around people. So
exactly. She's around other people. She's around other friends. So, yeah, that to me bugged me. And then her sitting on the chairs, on the steps of Charlie's, mm-hmm. and talking to Wiley on the phone and saying, oh, that'll be you sliding to home base when you get older. And I just wanted to slap her because it's home plate, not home base, you know. And I get it. Somebody who's not a sports fan would probably say something to that effect. I understand. But at the same time, you know, she's been around softball numerous times because of, you know, the Port Charles Softball League that's been going on for ages now. So she knows, she should know home plate. But then moving on to, all right, so we decided we're going to do a different, a new segment every week. And we're going to highlight a one-liner of the week. Mm-hmm. And while we're going to highlight that one-liner of the week, we're also going to talk about that specific storyline and kind of, you know, we talked a little bit about it, but not a lot. There was a point where Mason came into the art gallery to confront Ava on Monday, you know, after the charges were dropped for Sonny and basically accusing her of setting them up. And, you know, you wouldn't get your husband's body back unless this went through, blah, 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 blah.
She's not going to get her husband's body back. We know that.
Yeah.
He doesn't, but we do.
Yeah. And then she goes to Austin and, you know, she storms into his office and says, listen, you have to make sure that you get rid of, I don't know the exact verbiage, and I'm going to try to find a clip to put it in here. But basically the one line of the week was, your lollipop licking cousin came to see me and you have to, you know, get him off my back or something to that effect. I'll find the exact verbiage. But that, I laughed so hard at that line because Christy and I were talking about it before that we started recording, but what adult male is always seen licking a lollipop?
I mean, I was going to say something this week because this is like at least the third or fourth scene. Like almost every single time he like has a scene with Austin or Ava, he's like looking, he's standing there like he's this like, supposed to be like this mobster guy or whatever, and he's licking a lollipop. I'm like, right. How can I take you seriously? Like, this is crazy. This is so stupid. Like, I feel like Ava should just like lodge a lollipop in his throat or something. Go crazy on him. Go ham. I don't know. Like, this is just weird. It's just weird seeing a grown man who's supposed to be intimidating or whatever, and he's got a lollipop. Like, that's his like thing. It's a little strange, but you know.
So congratulations to Ava Jerome. You get this week's one-liner of the week from Suds in the Squared Circle, Suds News. However, we did see Nicholas and Austin in a couple of scenes this week. Nicholas is ready to leave. He's going to Greece to find his mother, who is out there looking for him.
Yeah, but he's not going to like let her know that he's like alive. Because that's what Austin was like, oh, so you're going to let her know that you're okay? No. Like, I'm just going to, like, do some business to make sure that my inheritance stays in my name or whatever so my son doesn't get it. So I don't want my son to get it. He'll probably never give it back to me.
Right.
And Austin was like, oh, you don't really care for your son that much, do you?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, and then I read that this wrapped up Adam's scenes as Nicholas. So he's going to be off canvas.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what I just read, that he's going to basically...
I thought he was back full-time.
Last time we see Nicholas for a while.
Oh, okay. I thought he was back full-time.
No, I think that was just a temporary thing.
Okay, well...
That's what I read, unless I read wrong. But they said Adam Huss is his name, and that he's only was on for this short run to wrap up the Nicholas stuff, which... I don't really feel like it wrapped up that
I wonder if he'll come back once Jeannie Francis comes back.
Yeah, it was two days ago they released articles saying that he wrapped up a short run for General Hospital.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's on the September 15th episode. Nicholas decides to leave the safety of his hideout, blah, blah, blah. They talk about it. And so that this is the last time we'll see Nicholas for a while until I guess they figure out if they want to, you know, if they want to recast, whatever. I know a lot of people want to see Tyler back. I think Tyler's in the position right now to
I'm not sure.
I think he needs to, you know, focus on his recovery. So as much as I love Tyler Christopher.
Yeah, although I will say I prefer Adam Huss over Marcus Paloma. So we'll see. I wouldn't mind them bringing Adam Huss back as Nicholas if they decide to go in that direction. I just didn't feel Marcus Paloma as Nicholas though.
No, there's a lot of people who didn't. I mean, I didn't mind him at first.
Yeah.
And then as time went on, I was just like, I felt kind of indifferent about him. I don't want to say a whole lot of, I don't like really speaking badly about actors because you don't really know the ins and outs of the business. And like, it can be hard to be a soap actor if it's your first time ever doing it and memorizing like 40 to 60 pages, however much they make you memorize. Like, that's tough. Like, not everyone can do that and pull that off. So anybody that even attempts to do it and has a half decent job at doing it, like, I commend them because I have memory issues. I couldn't do that.
Exactly. No, I get it. I'm the same way.
I mean, I will say he wasn't my favorite Nicholas, but I mean, he did have some chemistry with Becky, but then Becky has chemistry with just about everybody.
Right. Yep.
Except for Roger Haworth. That's my opinion. I don't think she had that much chemistry with Roger, but that's just my opinion. That's just my opinion. I think chemistry is this thing where you either see it or you don't see it. And it's kind of a, what do you call it? Like, it depends. It's like it's either an objective or subjective thing, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of either it's in that person's point of view, whether or not they got it or not.
Yeah, no, exactly. All right. Well, I think we're done with this episode for today. As always, you can find us anywhere. You find us for your favorite podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbean, obviously YouTube. Definitely give us a like, give us a subscribe, get notified every time a new content gets released. As you know, I'll be back tomorrow with the Squared Circle news as well. Got a lot going on, especially with the merger between WWE and UFC. So I'll be going over that tomorrow on the Squared Circle news. But definitely go to our website, sudsandsquaredcircle.com. You can find everything you need to know about the show there, as well as support the show, but also fill out some information about becoming a guest. There's a couple of different things we're working on down the road. I'm working on getting a couple friends on the show to talk about the mental health, and especially, you know, mental health today in society, especially with, you know, not only recent, how even podcasters have had to deal with bullying online because of their takes, but also, you know, with Billy Miller passing away and the rumor, you know, and his agent saying that he was dealing with manic depression at the time of his death. Mental health is an all-time importance nowadays. So we're going to work on getting a show together about that in the near future. I'm also working on getting some kind of a crossover show. It'll be a bonus episode with the Pier 54 girls, and doing an hour on their show and then an hour on our show. So it'll be released as a bonus episode. Also, Matt from 10th Floor will be doing another watch along at some point. So there's a lot going on with Suds Media and Suds in the Squared Circle. For everything, just go to sudsandsquaredcircle.com. Christy, go ahead and again, where could everybody find you?
I'm at CreativeFan15 on Twitter. I don't spend a whole lot of time on my soap Twitter anymore. Like you said, bullying, you know, it's a real thing. People are very quick to say really mean things, but especially on Twitter. I don't know why that social media is known for more than I think any other one. Yeah. I'm also on Instagram at instagram.com/TheAlone Radio. And I also do my little Roswell thing every Sunday night at usually 8 p.m. instagram.com/Roswell Virtual Party. We rewatch episodes. We have two more of the episodes left of season 3, because that's as far as they got with my beloved show. Yeah, and that's kind of where you can find me. So,
all right. Well, thank you for joining me today, as always. Folks, thank you for watching and listening. I'll be breaking this down again into different segments, posting all those and then the full episode. But definitely hit the notification button, like it, subscribe, give us a 5-star review wherever you can, and send us some feedback. We definitely need to up the algorithm, get the views, listens up, grow the audience. Again, this is Christy. I'm Vinny. We'll see you next week on the Suds News portion of Suds in the Squared Circle. Good night, everybody.